This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. French President Emmanuel Macron led tributes on Sunday to millions of soldiers killed in World War I, using an emotional ceremony in Paris attended by scores of world leaders to warn against nationalism a century on from the conflict. President Trump visited the American Cemetery Memorial in the suburbs of Paris, where he paid tribute to the soldiers killed in World War I and spoke of duty.
It is our duty to preserve the civilization they defended and to protect the peace they so nobly gave their lives to secure one century ago.
No soldier from World War I is known to be alive today, but their voices were present through high school students poignantly reading their letters written at the front a century ago. As the Democratic Republic of Congo deals with the current outbreak of Ebola, which is the worst in the country's recorded history, with 319 confirmed and probable cases, in neighboring Uganda, officials have stepped up measures to prevent an outbreak of the deadly virus. So far, the border between the countries remains open, and health experts fear the virus will enter Uganda through cross-border traffic. Uganda's health ministry stepping up preventive measures by deploying an experimental vaccine for healthcare and frontline workers. Jane Ruth Ossing is Uganda's health minister.
Currently, in Uganda, we have 2,100 doses of the vaccine available at the national medical stores, and preparations are in high gear, including training of health workers that are to be targeted.
In 2007, Ebola outbreak in Uganda infected 149 people, killed 37, and took several weeks to contain. This is VOA News. In Afghanistan, at least 25 people, including 10 members of the elite special forces, were killed in fighting the Taliban in the southeast Ghazni province, populated by the minority Shiite Hazaras. The violence comes as U.S. envoy returned to the region in another effort to bring the two sides to the negotiating table. Voters in the Kremlin-backed regions of eastern Ukraine cast ballots for local government leaders in what Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko called a fake election. Elena Shishkina is a lawyer in Donetsk, also running for president. She said international monitors from more than 14 countries were present at polling stations. She said yet it's another reason to acknowledge this election was legitimate despite the opposition of the U.S., the Ukraine, and others. Russia has backed the Russian-speaking insurgents who have declared what they call the People's Republics in eastern Ukraine, where Donetsk is located. Poland's president, prime minister, and other top political figures led a march organized by nationalist and far-right groups. Among the slogans that participants shouted were USA, Empire of Evil. Members of one nationalist group, the Eurosceptic All Polish Youth, burned a European Union flag. In the U.S. state of California, several major wildfires fueled by dry conditions and high winds have left at least 31 dead, hundreds unaccounted for a consumed thousands of homes and businesses, destroyed tens of thousands of hectares of land. One of the wildfires is called Camp Fire and affects the northern foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Tim Hall is a shelter volunteer in the hard-hit community of Paradise.
Food is going to continue to run out. So will supplies. We keep needing that. We definitely need medical supplies and medical professionals. A lot of our elderly are on oxygen, and that's running out quickly.
In Southern California, the so-called Wolseley Fire has threatened communities in Los Angeles and Ventura counties. That fire has encroached on the Los Angeles suburb of Thousand Oaks, which had just finished suffering from a mass shooting. Andy Fox is Thousand Oaks mayor.
The distinction I want to make at the outset is the victims and the families of the shooting, that was a permanent crisis. Those lives will never be recovered. Tonight we're talking about a serious fire situation, but thankfully we have not lost a single life. And as difficult as it may be, homes can be rebuilt, property can be reacquired.
Hundreds of thousands of people have been evacuated from their neighborhoods throughout the state. Tens of thousands of firefighters are battling the blazes. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Modi Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 12th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian police have summoned opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema to investigate him.
We know that in the last few days, there has been a lot of pressure from the ruling party, the ministers, and the other ruling party officials calling for the arrest of opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the opposition UPND of Zambia. Zimbabwe's government rejects allegations of attempted assassination of opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. South Sudan's main rebel factions said joint military visits are a sign that peace is finally being consolidated. Public service bus operators in Kenya have called for a nationwide strike today, Monday, over new rules to curtail deadly road accidents.
I don't think we want to call it a strike. What we are saying is this. We are asking our members to comply. And we are saying we will withdraw our vehicles until we get clarification.
Edwin Mukabana is the chairperson of Kenya's Federation of Public Transport Operators. And we'll have a wrap-up on last week's conference for war crimes court in Liberia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambian police have summoned opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema to present himself this Wednesday to the police Copper Belt Division headquarters in Ndola to undergo investigation. The subpoena did not say why Mr. Hichilema will be investigated, but just last week, the government accused him of fueling xenophobic attacks on Chinese nationals in Zambia. The anti-Chinese sentiments have been on the rise recently in Zambia over the government's huge Chinese loans and the awarding of profitable contracts to China. Charles Kakoma, a spokesman for the opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND, he says he thinks the government wants to arrest Mr. Hichilema and charge him with treason for exercising his freedom of speech as guaranteed under the Constitution.
They are saying that they wanted him for what they are calling investigations. But we know that in the last few days, there has been a lot of pressure from the ruling party, the ministers, and the other ruling party officials calling for the arrest of opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. They are accusing him of having incited people on the Kwa Belt region to riot. This, of course, is false because the riots on the Kwa Belt started way before even in Mr. Hakainde Hichilema went on a radio station to talk about the sale of a state-owned company called Zafico, which is involved in the timber industry. And obviously that company has been dealing with the Chinese citizens getting timber from Zambia, and this has disadvantaged a lot of Zambians, and there's unhappiness by the Zambians over there. Chinese dealings.
Mr. Kakoma, your party has been accused, or your leader has been accused of fueling xenophobic attacks on Chinese. The views that you hold about Chinese involvement in Zambia, isn't it enough reason for the police to want to interrogate your leader?
Well, the views that we hold about the Chinese in Zambia are that the Chinese are being favored thoroughly by the ruling party and the government in Zambia to make deals. There have been a lot of complaints from the Zambians over the Chinese, for example, grabbing their land and now grabbing their national assets, which are held by state-owned companies. And that is infuriating the Zambian people. It looks like the ruling party and the government are trying to gang the opposition, including Hakainde Hichilema, from talking about these things. But these are well-known things. They are in public domain. And therefore, to accuse Hakainde Hichilema of inciting the Zambian people is unfair and it is not right.
Your leader, Hakainde Hichilema, will he show up on the 14th? Will he go to the police station to be investigated?
Well, Hakainde Hichilema is innocent, so he will not run away from the police. He's going to appear before the police as requested because he's innocent. There's no need to run away from the police. But, of course, we know that their intention is to lock him up over trumped up charges. For example, the Minister for Home Affairs was telling Parliament that they will lock him up for spreading false news and alarming the public. Of course, that is not correct, because even under the current constitution, citizens have the freedom to express themselves. There is nothing alarming about it.
Charles Kakoma, spokesman of Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, you're speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Public service vehicle operators in Kenya have called for a nationwide strike today, Monday, over new guidelines aimed at curtailing the country's deadly road accidents. Edwin Mukabana, chairperson of the Federation of Public Transport Operators, says matatu buses owners and operators want clarification of the government's new guidelines. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government issued the new guidelines following a rash of deadly road accidents.
According to the National Transport and Safety Authority of Kenya, for the last 10 months, more than 2,500 Kenyans have died of road accident. The authority says the main cause of these accidents are drunk driving and overspeeding. However, Federation of Public Transport Operators Chairperson Edwin Mukabana says the public service vehicles are going to boycott transport from today, Monday, until the government clarifies the guidelines it imposed on public vehicles, which they feel are unclear and discriminatory.
I don't think we want to call it a strike. What we are saying is this. We are asking our members to comply. And we are saying we will withdraw our vehicles until we get clarification. New guidelines, which we feel are unclear and discriminatory, noting that we had written to CS Transport and Infrastructure and are yet to receive an invitation.
According to the National Transport and Safety Authority regulations, a public service vehicle should have a speed limiter, safety belts, and yellow line painted on it. The regulations also says drivers and conductors must have uniforms and badges. Their photos should be prominently displayed in the vehicles. But for years now, most vehicles have not complied with these guidelines. Director, National Transport and Safety Authority Francis Major says from today, Monday, all public vehicles must comply with the law.
We are really talking about safety and the need to protect the human life. SACCOS play a very important role in this. So we are centering on the key risk areas, speeding, issues of overloading, dangerous overtaking. Those are some of the key issues that we are addressing them, and the need for them to have licenses, because we know operators who are on the road illegally without any license, both the SACCO and the drivers. So those are the things that we are telling them. They need to be in compliance with the law.
Last month, 58 people were killed when a bus traveling from Nairobi rolled at Fort Tenan in Kericho County. Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i and his transport counterpart James Macharia insist that there must be a crackdown on public vehicles to save lives.
We have to change this matrix. We have to end this anarchy on our roads. We have lost far too many people. Any long-distance bus drivers, police commanders, if they do not have two drivers, if they cannot display their pictures and so on, arrest them where you find them. They park at the next police station. That's the end of the story. Be ruthless about this.
Corrupt traffic police officers and the National Transport and Safety Authority officials have been blamed for the rising number of road accidents in the country. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 12th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for South Sudan's main rebel faction, the SPLAIO, says the recent joint military visits are a sign that peace is finally being consolidated in South Sudan. SPLAIO military spokesman commanders made joint visits Saturday with their counterparts of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces to areas where they say peace is at risk. SPLAIO military spokesman Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel says the purpose of the visit is to discuss implementation of the peace process as well as build confidence between local commanders from both sides. Implementation of South Sudan's recent peace accord is moving along, although very slowly. Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel says soldiers from both sides coming together is a good sign that peace is on the horizon.
The purpose of the visit is, first of all, to build confidence that we are now peace partners, not enemies anymore. That is one. Then, two, we are to discuss how we are supposed to implement the security arrangement that was signed by our Dr. Machar and Salva Kiir respectively. So that's the purpose of the meeting. But also, as warring parties of before, you know, it's good that we come together and forget about the past and make sure that, okay, we start working towards achieving peace in South Sudan. Because if we are to continue with our politicians, it will not be very good. We need the military to take lead in the implementation so that if we're able to silence the gun, then this peace will be implemented properly.
So who control these areas where you visited and you feel that peace is at risk? Who controls this area?
First of all, we went to Yei. Yei town is completely under the South Sudan People's Defense Force. But we went from our territory to their territory. And that's where we had our meeting. That's the second meeting. The first one also happened in our territory, that is around Yei. That's around Juba. The government forces came from inside Juba Commando. Then they came to our forces around Juba and they had the meeting there. So we control the major town like Yei and Juba, but the government are inside the town. If we happen to come into an agreement that we are supposed to cease fire and we let open road, the civilian will be able to move freely, no matter whoever is in control of the area.
What does this mean now about the entire peace process? Because just a few weeks ago, before your leader, Riek Machar, came to Juba for the peace celebration, there was almost fighting going on almost every other week between your forces and the government forces. What can you tell us now about the peace process itself? Does this mean that peace is on its way to finally be attained?
Yeah, sure. With the current achievement we have done, there is really possibility of attaining peace. Because if I am, being the deputy military superintendent, is able to go to Yei and come back to my territory, and also the commander of the commando is able to come to our territory and go back, it is a clear sign that peace is setting in. We know that we have been clashing. Even after our chairman visited Juba, the clashes were still continuing. Even 2 days before we went to Yei, we clashed. But we have realized that, you know, sometimes the front line has got no network communication and stuff. So we decided to make sure that okay, we're able to sensitize our soldiers and realize that, okay, need to start by us coming together. If we're not able to come together as soldiers, it becomes very difficult for this to be implemented. I'm very happy that this is happening and we are moving well as far as the ceasefire is concerned.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-IO. You're speaking with me from Kampala, Uganda. The Zimbabwe government has dismissed claims made by the country's main opposition party that its leader, Nelson Chamisa, on Saturday survived an assassination attempt by state security agents. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance is digging in, saying it has evidence that indeed the state was behind a foiled assassination attempt on Mr. Chamisa.
Zimbabwe's Information Minister Monica Mtshangwa on Sunday dismissed claims made Saturday by the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Party that some state security agents tried to kill its leader, Nelson Chamisa. In a statement late Sunday, Mtshangwa expressed government's dismay over the allegations by the opposition that government agents attempted to abduct opposition leaders. Mtshangwa said not only are the allegations quote false, but they were also mischievous, unquote. She added that it was actually the opposition leader's convoy which suddenly stopped and blocked other vehicles on Saturday, and that some people, quote, were aggressively confronted and manhandled by members of Mr. Chamisa's entourage, including Mr. Chamisa himself, who lobbed himself at the back seat of their vehicle, punching and scratching, unquote. But Jacob Mafume, spokesman for the Movement for Democratic Change, dismissed Mchangwa's statement. He maintained that an attempted assassination of party leader Nelson Chamisa had been foiled. Chamisa narrowly lost to President Emmerson Mnangagwa in the July general election. Mafume said some vehicles were clearly following Chamisa when the incident happened on Saturday.
Monica Mtshangwa is misleading the nation. The individuals in these vehicles had with them guns, they had blue sirens, and they had communication gadgets that looked like state issued. There is no way that they could have just been ordinary travelers. They indeed indicated that they were coming from government. They are clearly people who were on a mission, and this is not the first time. They used 6 to 12 cars to follow the president. It is clearly a lie what Monica Mchangwa has told the people.
When reached Sunday for a voice comment, Zimbabwe Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said she stood by her written statement in which she dismissed the opposition claims that at least 4 vehicles were tracking Chamisa last Saturday and blocked his convoy. Chamisa was returning to Harare from a rally in Marondera, about 80 kilometers east of Harare, where he had told his supporters that President Emmerson Mnangagwa would give in to calls for him to step down after stealing the elections in July and for failing to run Zimbabwe's economy. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
The National Conference to Explore the Establishment of a War Crimes Court in Liberia has ended. The conference brought together local and international human rights organizations, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. As Moses Gazier would report from Monrovia, apart from the publicity the conference generated, it is not exactly clear whether the establishment of a war crimes court is attainable anytime soon.
This was the first time that Liberians came together to demand the setting up of a war crimes court to seek justice for the death of over 250,000 people during the Liberian civil crisis that began in the late 1980s and ended in 2003. Speaking at the ceremony, the country representative of the UN Human Rights High Commissioner, Dr. Ochimat Emeloyi, said justice should be the number one priority of the George Weah government.
Liberia's laudable propos agenda and its frantic effort to achieve the sustainable development goals, particularly goal 16, which focuses on peace, justice, and strong institutions, will be facilitated if the government of Liberia builds a peaceful and inclusive country that is governed by accountable and inclusive institutions.
Also attending the conference was Ambassador Stephen Rapp, former prosecutor of the Special Court for Sierra Leone. He said Liberia will not gain its full potential in delivering basic social services unless it ensures justice for past crimes.
Without the rule of law, without accountability, it's very hard to build the kind of country that this country deserves to be. But we're ready to work with you to achieve justice here for the victims of these crimes, and in particular to send a message to the future.
The Liberian legislature has the constitutional duty to craft a law for the establishment of a special criminal tribunal to prosecute those who allegedly committed heinous crimes during the Liberian civil crisis. Rosalind Swakogo-Dennis is the chair of claims and petition at the Liberian House of Representatives.
We are ready at all times to abrogate the culture of impunity in Liberia. And if impunity is giving Liberia this economic stagnancy, potential captivity, and political darkness, then the question is, why not impunity give way?
Some Liberians, including some in the George Weah administration, have called for a national referendum on the establishment of the War Crimes Court. The one-day gathering was organized by the Civil Society Human Rights Platform. According to the Secretary General of the group and chief organizer of the conference, Adama Dempster, participants spoke with a unified voice to pressure the George Weah administration to set up the War Crimes Court in Liberia.
From the TRC commissioners, from the international partners, from the national partners attending, we're seeing that level of commitment that people indeed want Liberia to address the issue of past human rights violation, eradicate the culture of impunity.
The conference brought together national, international, and human rights organizations. In the end, apart from the publicity it generated, it was exactly clear whether the setting up of the war crimes court in Liberia is closer or in a far distance. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
The 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Champions League, where Saad Begur was the unlikely to goal star as Esperance of Tunisia defeated Al Ahly of Egypt 3-0 at the weekend in raids to win a third CAF Champions League title. The impressive comeback to overturn a 3-1 first leg deficit also helped Esperance book their place at the FIFA Club World Cup in the United Arab Emirates. Their prize is a place in the quarterfinals of the FIFA Club World Cup at Hassa Bin Zayed Stadium in Al Ain on December 15th, where they will face the winners of the tournament's opening game between Al Ain versus Team Wellington. Uganda Cranes head coach Sebastian Desabre has named his 25-man final squad to enter residential camp later today at the Kibera Country Club in Bokuto ahead of their Total AFCON qualifier with Cape Verde due on Saturday, the 17th of November 2018. Ahead of that all-important encounter with Cape Verde, coach Desabre say it's a match they don't intend to lose.
We want to finish the target this month. But the game, this game is important for win at home. We keep on the two success against Lesotho, but Capo Verde is another challenge. It's a good team with all player in Europe in the big club. It's very good team, and we work with humility, but. We need to win at home in Nambole Stadium in front of the fan.
Staying with football news, Egypt's friendly game against the United Arab Emirates, scheduled for the 20th of November, has been called off, the team director said on Sunday, without providing reasons for the abrupt decision. The Pharaohs would only play against Tunisia in Friday's African Nations Cup qualifier. Tunisia are on top of the group with 12 points, 3 ahead of Egypt, who face Niger in their final qualifier in March 2019. And to East Africa, where Kenya's 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifier against Sierra Leone has been called off. The match was supposed to be played in Nairobi on November the 18th. However, Football Kenya Federation on Sunday received a communication from the Confederation of African Football calling off the game. Sierra Leone are currently serving an indefinite suspension from all football activities imposed on them by FIFA. In athletics news, Kenya's Bremen Misoi and Shelmith Miruki won the 36th edition of the Athens Marathon in testing conditions. The 29-year-old Bremen Misoi clocked a strong 2 hours, 10 minutes, 56 seconds, the third fastest time ever on the turf original marathon course from the town of Marathon to Athens. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Zambian police have summoned opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema to present himself this Wednesday to the police Copper Belt Division headquarters in Ndola to undergo investigation. The subpoena did not say why Mr. Hichilema will be investigated, but just last week, the government accused him of fueling xenophobic attacks on Chinese nationals in Zambia. And a spokesman for South Sudan's main rebel faction, SPLA-IO, says the recent joint military visits are a sign that peace is finally being consolidated in South Sudan. And that is it for this Monday, November 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strayak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be flying. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Is there a leadership deficit in Africa? Does the continent lack leaders who are compassionate about their citizens and believe in strong institutions? Host Shaka Sali returns to to lead a discussion on the importance of strong leaders and strong institutions on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.